Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Perek Yodalad, the 14th chapter of Yeshayahu. So we're in the focus, we're in the general 11 Perek trajectory, which is focusing outwards to the rest of the nations. And this Perek continues in that direction, the main focus being Bavel, Babylon, and also additionally Pelesheth, the area of Philistine down in the south. So let's just break this parak up into four different sections. The first section runs for the first two psukim, and that is about the return of Israel to the land. In and amongst the downfall of Bavel, there's this description of how Israel will return to their land, and at this momentous time, converts will swarm to them and attach themselves to Israel, and Israel returned, and instead of being oppressed by others, others will serve Israel. Just a pasuk to capture the poetic nature of this time. Uvachar od bi Yisrael, Hashem is going to choose Israel once again, v'nichom al admasam, return them to their lands, v'nilvo hager aleihem, everyone will want to join themselves to Israel, v'nisbechu al beis Yaakov, and everybody will be added to them. When is this happening? So just before we move on to the next section, in this first section, when does it actually happen? The Mitzvot David points out that this seemingly is on a simple level when Bavel or Assyria falls. But on a deeper level, it sounds messianic. This is the potential of the Messiah, of everybody coming back and being brought back to the land of Israel. Why is this happening? So the Malbim points out that there's two ways that Israel, B'nai Israel, can get redeemed. One option is that our actions make us redeemable, make us deserving of redemption. And the other option is because Hashem has to have mercy on us, because we're not really deserving. If you look at the very beginning of this parak, the first word is Kirachem Hashem es Yaakov, when Hashem has mercy on Jacob, which means to say we're talking about a stage where we don't necessarily deserve it. We're being brought back not because we deserve it. We'll call it the latter way of return. So just worthwhile thinking. We move into the second section. The second section runs from Pasuk Gimel to Pasuk Ches. This is the rejoicing of the oppressed. So as Bavel is falling down, Hashem describes that on that day, Israel is relieved of their oppression, and they'll bear the following message. They'll talk about the relief from those who hurt them and were powerful in previous years, and the arrogance and those who are high will be lowered and humbled. And in that silence ensuing, the humbled will sing. Just a pasuk to capture the poetic nature of this point in the chapter. V'nocha shokta, there'll be this silence. Kol ha'aretz patzchurina, and in that silence, the whole land, all those who were silent before and oppressed and who had no justice, will be able to sing in that absence of oppression. That leads us to the end of the section 2 of this parak. The third section we're going to focus on is a section over here which is moves from Pasuk Tes all the way to Chaf Gimel, and this is the eternal disgracing of the Babylonian leaders. There's a debate as to whether the Babylonian leaders refers to Nebuchadnezzar, Nabucodonosor, who was the king of Bavel, or whether it refers to their spiritual, the Saroi Shel Bavel, their spiritual minister in heaven who's appointed upon them. Most of the Mephoreshim take the approach this is referring to actually Nebuchadnezzar, and this is what Hashem says. When Nebuchadnezzar, the entire world will rejoice. But those in the netherworld, those in the next world, so to speak, those in Sheol, which is the lower realms of this world, will be in fear because he's coming. That's how powerful and terrifying a human being he was. But when he arrives there, the dead will see that he's no better than them. And now the Navi turns to Nebuchadnezzar himself and says, "You said you'd ascend to heaven and become God, but you are cut down to the lower worlds yourselves. You destroyed cities in the world, but you won't even get buried like kings. You'll be thrown from your own grave." Hashem then promises to cut down everybody in Nebuchadnezzar's family and clean his country out, making it an uninhabitable marsh. So there's a real, very vindictive, directed attack on Bavel and their representatives. Very, very, we can see the amount of damage that Babylon must have done to the world, which warrants this kind of prophecy. Just to get a sense of the poetic nature of this section, the pasuk reads, "You said in your heart, I'm going to go up above the stars of the gods. Arim kisi, I'm going to lift up my throne, a shei bahar mo eir yarkei seitzof, and I'm going to be above the mountain meeting, the Har Tzion. And what's going to happen? Ele abama say, ov adam ele el yon, I'm going to be like God. Ach el sheol turad el yarkei seibor, but you're going to be thrown to a pit." That's how the powerful words of Yeshayahu. Is this reflecting any historical evidence? So the Radak and most of the Mephoreshim point out that yes, ultimately what's going to happen is in the future, when Nebuchadnezzar is rejected, he will be brought back to prison afterwards, and his son, Evil-Merodach, will be taking his place. But his son will not want to take the throne until he knows for sure that his father, Nebuchadnezzar, is dead. And so they will actually exhume his body and throw it out to prove that he's dead. And this is sort of that ultimate disgracing of the body of Nebuchadnezzar, which is being referred to by Yeshayahu now. We move on to the next section of this parak, which is from Chof Dalet to Chof Zayin. This is a very brief section which talks about Hashem's revenge on all nations. And Hashem says, Nishma Hashem Tzvakos Leimor, Hashem, the God of the legions, swears the following, Imloi kasher dimisi kenoisova kasher yatzdi hitokum. I have a plan, and it's going to happen by hook or by crook. I'm going to make sure that all the Assyrians, all the Babylonians, are going to die, and that's it. Now, by the way, this is what gives rise to those Mepharshim we talked about last chapter, who describe that this is not maybe referring to Babel per se, because Babel isn't a power yet in the times of Yeshayahu, but rather referring to Assyria cloaked in the words of Babel. We see Tanakh does this a number of times, where Babel is sort of the code word which covers the Assyrian Empire. Nonetheless, what Hashem is saying, and as the Mepharshei Pshat to say, is that Hashem says, whether it be Assyria, whether it be Babel, whether it be any world empire that you think controls the world, believe me, I'm in charge of them, and I'll make sure that their end is to be found. And finally, the parak closes in the last section, which is a very fascinating section, which talks about Bishnas Mois HaMelech Achaz. There's a prophecy which he gives in the year of the death of Achaz, and this prophecy is directed south, or southwest, actually, to the Philistines. And he says, Al tismechi peleshes kulech. Don't be so excited when Achaz dies, you Philistines. Why? Because you think kinishbar shevet makech, you think that your oppressor has died. Ah, but kimishoresh nochos, inochosh yetzei shefa, etc. You, from the serpent's lair, or roots, come out a snake, meaning you are not done yet. And he describes how in the future there's going to be this king who is going to destroy them and make them all alone, and there will be no way to get around them. Umaya ane malche goy. How are you going to answer? How will any of your representatives express themselves? Ki Hashem yisad Zion, because God establishes Zion. This is a very hard section to appreciate when it actually occurred, for the simple reason is that during the times of Uzziah, that's the grandfather of Achaz, yeah, Uzziah had conquered the land of Philistines. They were taxpayers to Israel. But in the times of Achaz, that land was taken back by the Philistines. It is after Achaz's death that his son, Chizkiyah, was going to take that land back. So Achaz was actually a low point in terms of control of Philistines. So it doesn't make sense that they're rejoicing when Achaz dies, because Achaz was not their oppressor. In fact, they vanquished Achaz to a certain degree and regained their own independence. So the Mepharshim struggle to see how this works. The way Rashi suggests is that this is referring to the fact that the Philistines so hated those of Israel, those of Yehuda, that they so rejoiced even when the one who was not oppressing them dies, because it's further disgracing of the area of Yehuda. And what the response to this is don't worry, there's going to come Chizkiyahu, who came from Uzziah, who's going to reconquer you, don't get so excited. Again, this is a prophecy outwards to the nations. It is interesting, Rabbi Nilau has a suggestion that again, he's not talking about how Israel is going to vanquish the Philistines, but rather actually Assyria themselves is going to come from the north and move along the coastline and take all the coastline kingdoms, including those in the Gaza area, the Ashkelon area, which is the area of the Philistines. This is going to be the conclusion of this. Just a very fascinating way of looking at this. Now, just one last thing, a thought as we close this, and that is that a lot of what goes on in this parak reminds me of a very beautiful idea which is expressed in the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says, at the end of the Seder, we say, Chad Gadia. We say this whole, you know, song which we hope to stay up for, and we talk about how there's this goat, and there's this cat, and there's this dog, and there's this stick, and there's this fire, and the whole business, and everything is, you know, destroying each other. And it's interesting, if you to play the we'll call it the good-bad game, so we say, okay, well, let's assume that the Gadi, the goat, this one little goat, this forlorn goat, is in fact Israel, it's the good. So that means to say that the cat is bad because the cat bites the goat. But then the dog who attacks the cat must be good, because he's getting the bad. So you go good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, all the way back up. It actually doesn't work out because the numbers are odd, and that means to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes out on the side of Rachman Litzlan, the negative side, which doesn't make sense. So the Vilna Gaon points out that when we look at Chad Gadia, what Hashem is essentially saying is, the reason why the dog bites the cat is not because the cat is bad and the dog is good. The reason why the dog bites the cat is very simple, is because a dog is a dog and a cat is a cat, and it's a dog's nature to attack cats. Simple as that. But what Chagadia is pointing out is that there is a plan. There is a master plan in the whole perspective. Meaning, Hashem is controlling and making sure that those who need to get vanquished at the right time are going to get vanquished, and that's going to be part of his plan too, even if it doesn't look like it's necessarily relating to Israel per se. And when we look at a perek like this, when we look at a perek in Yeshayahu, which talks about, you know, here he's turning to the Philistines, and maybe it's Assyria is going to be vanquishing them, or Babel's vanquishing the Assyrians, and then the Babylonians are going to be vanquished. What we're seeing over here is that that same perspective is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I have a plan, it's going to work out. I have a direction for the world, I have a direction, and those who are evildoers will pay. They will pay. They may be actually destroyed by other evildoers, but I'm going to take care of them as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of the world, and that is the perspective that Yeshayahu is sharing as he turns both to the Babylonians and to the Philistines. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.